Support comes from Sunday Morning Cafe, presenting Resilience and Creativity, a concert and interview with Royce Martin, creator of Swag Time, and resilience researcher Dr. Tom Wagner on August 2nd, SundayMorningCafe.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, May 20th. I'm Abby Larico. The Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Missouri is opening up for the first time about how the nation's immigration system separated his family for a year.
When you hear the word immigrant, we're not just talking about some nameless, faceless group of people. When you hear a gay person, you're not talking about some nameless, faceless. You're talking about actual people who have lives.
A conversation with Bishop Dion Johnson coming up after this news on The Gateway. Data centers are not welcome in the city of St. Charles. The city council voted last night to ban large-scale data center developments within city limits. The 7-1 vote makes permanent a one-year moratorium on proposals that was put into place in the fall. Development leaders have spoken in favor of developing a framework for data center regulations within the fast-growing community, but St. Charles residents have largely turned out in opposition. A Missouri appeals court upheld the ruling that overturned Christopher Dunn's murder conviction. As St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis reports, Dunn says it's been a long and stressful journey.
A lower court judge ruled in 2024 that Dunn was wrongfully convicted of the 1990 murder of Rico Rogers. The conviction was based on testimonies from two people who later recanted. Dunn spent 34 years in prison. The appeals court ruling comes exactly 36 years and one day after Rogers was killed. Dunn says while he's trying to make every day worth living, the ongoing legal battles have caused anxiety and stress.
I feel like I'm in prison to a degree, and not knowing if waking up would be a better option for me, or if I should just remain in that bed and just exist.
A spokesperson for the Missouri Attorney General said they're reviewing the ruling and considering next steps. I'm Chad Davis, St. Louis Public Radio.
A St. Louis judge is weighing whether to force the city to spend another $68 million on police by June 30th. Judge Joan Moriarty heard arguments yesterday in a lawsuit filed by the state-appointed board that oversees the city's police department. The board argues the city was required to include RAM settlement and budget reserves when it calculated police funding in its current budget. The city is required to spend a set percentage of general revenue on policing. Board attorney Chris Gerville told the judge that the state Supreme Court had given her a clear definition of general revenue to follow.
The city revenues break down binary, special revenue or general revenue. If it falls into that general revenue category, judge, the percentage applies.
The city, though, says that settlement funds and reserves are not revenue under generally accepted accounting principles. Andrew Wheaton is an attorney for the city.
Revenue, by nature and by definition, is necessarily tied to a specific interval of time. It means nothing to say I have revenue of $1 million.
The judge will rule at a later date. Her decision may also impact the amount the city has to give to the police department in the budget that begins July 1st. Police shot and killed a man in downtown St. Louis Tuesday morning after investigators say he threatened officers with a pipe and a knife. Police responded to calls about the man swinging a metal pipe near Locust and Broadway just before 11 a.m. That's close to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Police said the pipe looked like something that might be part of a pop-up tent. Police say when officers arrived, the man ran and refused to put down the pipe. When they caught up with him near the Missouri Athletic Club, police tried to use a taser but say it had no effect. Police say the man then charged at officers with the pipe, and an officer fired shots. They say the man dodged the gunshots, pulled out a chef's knife, and charged at officers again. At that point, a police officer fired and struck him. The man fell and was taken to the hospital, where he later died from his injuries. No officers were hurt. The St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department is investigating the shooting. Officers are trying to identify the man and determine whether he had threatened anyone before officers arrived. A nonprofit known as Team Jakey has raised more than $500,000 for suicide prevention and mental health awareness in St. Louis since 2014. St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri reports on the group's fundraising event this week.
The Zeller family formed the nonprofit in 2014 in memory of Jake Zeller, who died by suicide the year before.
Since then, the group has worked to end the stigma around mental health issues while providing hundreds of thousands of dollars to suicide prevention. Logan Janis is Team Jakey's executive director. He was a guest on St. Louis on the Air.
We are, if really nothing else, awareness. You know, we are not licensed therapists. We are persons and people that have gone through a traumatic event.
The group will hold a fundraising event on Thursday at Forehand Brewery's downtown location. If you or someone you know is struggling, help is available. Call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, available 24/7. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri lawmakers have approved legislation allowing schools to hire armed guards known as Missouri Rangers. The bill passed along party lines during the final days of the legislative session and now heads to Governor Mike Kehoe. Under the proposal, schools could hire volunteer or paid guards who would be authorized to carry firearms on campus. Supporters, including the bill's Republican sponsor, say the measure gives schools the option of using more highly trained personnel. The legislation also includes additional firearms and emergency response training, along with physical fitness requirements for applicants. Democrats in both the House and Senate opposed the bill, arguing that more guns in schools is not the answer to school safety concerns. Governor Kehoe has until mid-July to sign or veto the legislation. The autonomous naval refueling plane that Boeing is building in the Metro East recently completed its first successful test flight. As STLPR's Will Bauer reports, the MQ-25A Stingray's promising flights means Boeing will continue moving its production along.
The MQ-25 isn't like a typical drone that's remotely piloted. It's autonomous and flies itself. The Navy wants to use it to phase out using the FA-18 Super Hornet for refueling. That will allow the FA-18 to refocus on combat. The MQ-25 also has a longer range, which should help protect naval sailors on aircraft carriers. Troy Rutherford is the vice president of the MQ-25 program.
What we're doing here locally in St. Louis and what Boeing's piece of this is really setting carrier aviation for the future, which is just really, really exciting for us and the entire team.
The first plane that will be completely built in Muskoka is already under production. The Navy still needs to do some testing. When production ramps up, Boeing's Metro East facility will employ 300 people. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
The bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Missouri says a routine immigration appointment upended his family's life for a year. In 2024, Reverend Dion Johnson and his husband went to Mexico for a green card appointment. Johnson says it ended with an immigration officer telling his husband he had to remain in the country for a year or risk being deported and barred from the U.S. for a decade. STLPR's Marissa Ann Lewis Thompson spoke with Johnson about how the separation affected their children, how Johnson navigated it as an immigrant himself, and why he's choosing to share his story a little more than a year after his husband's return to St. Louis.
We went for a standard, you know, green card interview with, you know, physical and biometrics and all of that stuff. And the officer looked through his paperwork, found no deficiencies, you know, no criminal background, no criminal record, no anything. But looked at him and said, you have not lived in Mexico for most of your life. You need to remain here for the next year. Needless to say, that was devastating for us because we were just expecting a run-of-the-mill, all of his paperwork is in order, but the immigration officers have pretty wide latitude in how they can determine this.
You and your husband have two kids. Mm-hmm. What was that conversation like explaining to them that their dad had been detained and you didn't know when or if he'd be coming home?
Yeah, that was a really difficult conversation to have. It involved lots of tears because to try to explain to a preteen and an early teen that, oh, we went for a routine interview and one of your parents isn't coming back home potentially at least for a year. And it was a big year for, like, our daughter was going to be turning 15. We were planning for a quinceañera, you know, and we had to cancel doing a quinceañera because he wasn't going to be there. There were lots of life events that we just didn't do for that year because we couldn't. We tried as best we could to incorporate it, but the conversation was really hard to say to, you know, a 14 and 12-year-old at the time, this next year, it's just me.
You are also an immigrant. You're originally from Barbados, mm-hmm. but you're also a U.S. citizen.
Yes.
How did you ease your kids' worries about the potential of this happening to you?
In the initial conversations, that was a question from one of the kids. You know, well, are they going to come for you? Are they going to make you leave the country? My mother, who is also an immigrant, lives with us, and so she's around to help take care, to help with the kids. Is grandma going to go away? You know, because again, these are the fears that a 12 and 14-year-old are going to have. And so I had to assure her, you know, I'm an American citizen. You know, I'm naturalized. I mean, I am not going to go anywhere. And if they came to try to take me away or something like that, I suspect that, you know, the 10,000 plus people that make up the Diocese of Missouri would have a little bit to say about, you know, us being taken away or something like that. But I had to just, I really had to reassure them that I was not going to be taken away. I had to change my own routine, that if I traveled, just before bedtime, I would call to say, you know, hey, this is where I am. I'm safe. I'm getting ready for bed. I hope you all are having a good time to get ready for bed. So, I mean, having to do more reassurance of you are fine. I am fine. Just keep going. That became a lot of what I had to do for that year.
Why was it important for you to share your family's story?
Part of me being able to share my story and being able to say this is who I am is to demystify all of those stereotypes that people have as much as I can, but also to remind people that, you know, when you hear the word immigrant, we're not just talking about some nameless, faceless group of people. When you hear a gay person, you're not talking about some nameless, faceless. You're talking about actual people who have lives, who deserve the same dignity, the same aspirations that you have.
That was Reverend Dion Johnson, the Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Missouri, speaking with STLPR's Marissa Ann Lewis Thompson. You can hear more of this conversation on St. Louis on the Air today at noon and 7 p.m. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.